You're listening to Holistic Travel Nurse. It's Naomi. I'm going to share, because this is one that's going to go viral. Just came out today. This is The High Wire with Dil Bigtree. If you don't support him, please do. Enjoy this interview. Enjoy this episode. This is totally from him.
We have Joe Biden. We have the FDA. We have the CDC. We have the WHO. They are forcing mandates on people. They are saying things like, if 25% of people are not vaccinated, you're going to put us all at risk. We've heard pandemic of the unvaccinated. All of these, you know, these lines and these statements and this propaganda machine that we know Joe Biden funded with $4 billion to try and stop vaccine hesitancy. It's probably only a matter of time before they try to shut down this website. So please, if you haven't already, get us your email on our newsletter, so that at the very least, even if they shut us down and bring all draconian, you know, warriors from hell like Australia upon us, that we can still email you our damn show if that's what it takes. We're going to do whatever it takes. We will not go away. We will never give in. But who knows? We don't know what that means, right? We don't know what that means. But here's the point. Where is the science? Do we really believe the best and brightest are working the CDC and WHO? I don't. I've been in this investigation for 5 years. I worked at CBS on the CBS Talks to the Doctors, as many of you know. I have done such a deep investigative dive that here's one thing I can tell you. It's sort of what I remember, you know, we used to hear, if you can do the job, do it. If you can't, teach. In many ways, when it comes to medicine, if you can be a good doctor, if you got good grades, be a doctor. If you can't, get into the healthcare system or work for the government. And so that's what we know. The lowest bottom feeders are the ones that are making these decisions. Meanwhile, how about the inventor of mRNA vaccines, Dr. Robert Malone? Why are we not having him in the FDA meetings? Why is this guy, who knows how the technology works, he designed it, he built it, why is he concerned? Why is he worried about antibody-dependent enhancement? Why isn't he in these meetings? Because he knows something. Or how about Dr. Geert van den Bosch? We broke down his videos before. I mean, this guy's resume is off the charts. What he shows you in his resume is, not only do I know how to make a freaking vaccine, I know how to build the infrastructure of how we deliver a vaccine, and I also know all of the market forces that affect a vaccine. And guess what? I know the natural forces. He's a veterinarian. He studies the animals, the zoology, the entire thing that happens when you release a vaccine. This was his job working the Ebola vaccine program for Gavi, was what will happen if we release, you know, this vaccine on a giant portion of Africa. And he would look at all the repercussions, all the pressures that would be on that vaccine, that would be on that virus. What would be the benefits? What would be the outcomes? What would be the negative side effects? How do we choose the right vaccine? This is a guy that, the more and more I hear him, the more I believe he may be the most important voice in the world today. Well, both of these voices came together in an interview just this last week that came out. I want to make it go viral. The last time we played Geert van den Bosch's videos, I think he was in the hundreds, like 150,000. It's now over 1.5 million views. There it is, 1.5. So we took it from about 400,000 to 1.5 million views. I hope that we do that with this next video that we're going to dig through today. I'm going to just bring out the excerpts that I think are so critical and so important. I said before, I thought that last interview with Geert was one of the most important videos of all times. I think this one may even trump that, because now we are really getting to see a man who predicted exactly where we would be. That was several months ago. We talked about his videos then. He said we would be right where we are. He was said essentially Israel would be having the problems it's having. So why don't we check in now with a guy who's the only one in the world that has called this exactly right and nailed it to the wall. This interview between Malone and Geert van den Bosch starts out with an obvious statement by the host saying, you know, a lot of the work you've done is now playing into the hands of anti-vaxxers. Are you afraid you're going to be called an anti-vaxxer because of your work? This is how they started out this conversation and what they said about being looped in with anti-vaxxers.
Are you guys, I assume, are not feeling proud that you are almost heroes to anti-vaxxers? How does that make you feel?
Good.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, this this is not an issue. I think we have no longer the luxury of discriminating between all kinds of different groups. I think I'm making my ideas very, very clear. I'm not stigmatizing people. If there is somebody who is fundamentally against vaccines, he's open to my reasoning, to what I'm saying. I mean, this is not the way. I'm all the time advocating for solidarity. The only way we are going to get out of this crisis is put our heads together and to overcome this kind of short-sightedness, who is belonging to which camp. I don't care. We shouldn't be doing that. I'm so sick of all this discrimination and stigmatizing people. I mean, it doesn't help us at all. So I'm not having a problem at this point with anti-vaxxers. I know people don't consider me as an anti-vaxxer. I know that some anti-vaxxers highly appreciate me and other people who are trying to who are driven by a passion for the truth and finding out how we can solve this problem.
So I share Gert's perspective, particularly the wish that we didn't find ourselves separating into these antagonistic groups. I think it's highly counterproductive. Personally, I find the term anti-vaxxer pejorative. It's a very simple label that the media likes to use to discount people. It grossly oversimplifies what's a complex landscape, trying to make sense out of a very complex landscape in terms of the viral evolution and the interaction of that with vaccines and with vaccine policy. And the press always loves to label things and to separate everybody into opposing camps and set us off against each other, I guess because it promotes clicks and sells whatever it is that they're selling, but it doesn't make for good science. And then they introduce these terms like anti-vaxxer and try to, yes, exactly, Maria, they try to put us in a box to suit their narrative, and they reinforce it through a variety of interesting tools like these fact checkers. But it's anti, and using these terms is destructive. It destroys our ability to communicate complex ideas and to try to resolve them in a scientific fashion, which requires, as you know, Philip, requires that we be allowed to have open and constructive dialogue. So I just want to get that in about this whole pigeonholing of people as anti-vaxxers. I work with some of the people that have been labeled anti-vaxxer, have been named on the Dirty Dozen list by the President of the United States. I found them very reasonable, intelligent people that are trying to make sense out of complex information just the same as the rest of us are. So in some, I'm not attacking you, Philip, but I really wish we could stop using this term. I think it is counterproductive.
I couldn't agree more with either of these two brilliant scientists who know what they're talking about. We've got to stop all of the pejorative statements about each other. As many, I think it was so well put by the NBA basketball players. You know, this is my personal decision, but we shouldn't be separated for our color, our religion, our race, or our medical decisions. We've all sort of got to get along together. Such a great point. Let me make it perfectly clear for both of these guys. They are pro-vaccine. I will get attacked, I'm sure, by some of you, as I did when I originally presented the information by Geert. I was told, you better watch out. He's controlled opposition. He's trying to lead us astray. That never made sense to me. I said, I've always believed, and I still believe this day, and I think he's proven, he warned us that we were going to pressure this virus to become more deadly, put ourselves in a very difficult and dangerous position. He's going to double down on that today. But both of these gentlemen have worked with vaccines and developed vaccines and promoted vaccines their entire lives. I don't expect they're going to stop doing that for the rest of their lives. I don't know, but I know that Dr. Robert Malone has definitely said that currently, as we speak, he's working on getting new treatments and old treatments. He's one of the companies he has repurposes old drugs like ivermectin, like hydroxychloroquine, and others that he said are having a great effect against this disease. And he's also involved in the development of future vaccines for coronavirus, not this one particularly. So I want to get that out there in the front, okay? These are pro-vaccine guys. And you can say whatever you want, but when you have two people that put their legacies on the line, their entire careers, to go against the vaccine that everyone they know is pushing, every government agency, including the one that Dr. Robert Malone works for. He works with the Department of Defense. He works with the United States government. He knows more about the FDA and the NIH than anyone I've ever interviewed on this show because he has close interpersonal reactions with them. So when they start sounding alarm bells over one specific product that they think is incredibly dangerous to our future, I think we should listen. And that's what we're going to do right now. So when it comes down to it, this conversation of who's really more at risk, who, you know, the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated. We've talked about Israel and the rise in Israel. We've seen it all here, but let's take it away from me now. Let's go ahead and look at what Geert Vandenbosch, what are they saying? Who are really the highest at risk? Who are really the ones that are putting us at risk? That is what this conversation is about. If you have a question about vaccinated versus unvaccinated, let it come to rest right now. Here's our first video.
In terms of this phenotype that the vaccinated show less disease in general, if you think that through, but you've got a situation in which the vaccinated, and this is going to be a little bit of a mind bender for people, the vaccinated are actually at higher risk for becoming super spreaders because they're replicating virus at the same or higher levels as the unvaccinated, but they feel better. So that means they're more likely to be out in the community. You know, if you think that through, you've got a situation where you have people that are feeling relatively good, moving out in the community, highly infectious, infected and producing virus at high titers in nose and oropharynx. And that could well account for some of this surge.
You can check this. In countries where you have high vaccine coverage rates, so high rates of vaccination, like UK, like Israel, like the US, you will see that there is some movement of waves around the plateau that is really very high. The average infection rate is high. If you compare this, US, UK, Israel, for example, with other European countries, you will see that plateau is much, much higher. So we know that, and maybe I'll have an opportunity to explain this to your audience, Philip, the effect of mass vaccination, that indeed, in vaccinated people, they exert a lot of immune pressure on the virus, and this is, in fact, an ideal breeding ground for more infectious rates. So the more you vaccinate, the more you're going to see that you'll not succeed in bringing down the infectious pressure. However, if you still have a substantial proportion of the population that is non-vaccinated, you will see that these people will, of course, get infected. But what will happen is that a lot of them still up till today, is not going to have any kind of the disease. They get infected. They will shed the virus for some time, but they will eliminate the virus. So basically, they are going to reduce infectious pressure. And those who get the disease, they will build, of course, lifelong, well, maybe not lifelong, but at least a long-lived immunity, and also contribute to diminishing the infectious pressure. And that is my prediction, and that is how what I interpret when I see this data in Israel, where you see there is not big waves anymore, but the plateau is very, very high, right? And what else do you expect? You have almost vaccinated all people, and we know that the vaccinated people are not going to contribute to diminishment of the infectious pressure.
I don't think it'd be made any clearer. Dr. Robert Malone tells you that sort of paradoxically, the vaccinated are the ones that are going that are becoming the super spreaders of the virus in any variant. So no matter what anybody says, when you are told that it's the unvaccinated that are spreading this, someone in my family, I heard, just made a comment recently about this. That is not true. These scientists know what they're talking about. The science is very clear, and it makes sense, right? If all this vaccine does and all it's set out to do is to diminish your symptoms, then you have less symptoms, which means when you do get sick and you are shedding, that you're out running around and partying. You're giving it to everybody. And let's just, I still say we're saying it reduces symptoms. I'm not sure that it does. I think that, you know, when we look at it, but only history will tell. So let's go ahead and give them that. I'll give you that. Let's say, and this is what Malone's doing, if it reduces symptoms, then you've created a real problem. A sick person is going to stay home, especially now. Come on, even if you get the sniffles. And by the way, I know I'm coughing and sneezing. It's allergies. I've already done a COVID test. I know that, like, everyone's like, well, what about you, Del? Because I know some of you heard me coughing earlier. But the point is this, that even with allergies, honestly, you know what I did yesterday? I said, oh my God, I got allergies. I think I got a COVID test. We have them here. So just to make sure that I didn't put my staff in any risk or whatever like that, that's how we're all thinking. So if you're unvaccinated, which I am unvaccinated, and you seem, if you have symptoms, you immediately go, well, let me stay out of everybody's way till I figure out what's going on. The vaccinated person is not doing that. They're not being tested. They're at the NBA going, see, I don't have to get tested. Nanny, nanny, boo, boo. And they're spewing all over us, which is why they're missing camp while they're getting sick. So there you have it, clearly. And when he talks about Israel, just really quickly, let's just look at what happened to Israel. These are the numbers right there in that first, you know, U that you see there, November 16th. It was right in December after that that the vaccine program started for Israel. It obviously did nothing to stop that first spike. It went up, it came down, and then it's gone up again, it's come down. But as we know right now, some of the highest reported cases anywhere in the world, my understanding last week was the second highest infection rate in the world. But what he's saying is it's all very high. Like, science draws a line through that, tries to find that median space. And even though it's going like this, where is it? And what he's saying, all the vaccinated countries are sitting really up high, whereas the less vaccinated, that median line is much lower. Here's, look at all these countries, United Kingdom, Israel, United States. We're all in this mess. There are African nations kicking our butts right now when it comes to cases in the world. But let's go ahead and move on. I want to get to Geert Van den Bosch. Last time he explained, you know, sort of the selective bias of a vaccine and the problem with it. He talked about how you had specific antibodies that would only see the spike protein, whereas natural immunity sees all of the entire virus. It can handle any strain, any future variants. I did a whole thing with a football team and, you know, there it was. I did this. I'm not going to do it again, but basically showing you that the vaccine only trained you to look out for the running back. The rest of the team can run the ball and you'll never go after them. But if you're not vaccinated, you attack the whole thing. Well, he brings us a new graph. It's a little bit complicated. So turn on your ears. What I want to say right now is, here on the High Wire, I know it. We get in the weeds. This isn't like Fox. If you want to go and get like headline news and have it go by really quickly, then do that somewhere else. Here on the High Wire, I am so jazzed by trying to understand what is really happening here. What is going on with this virus? How is this pandemic working? How are they making the decisions they're making? If you can understand what Geert Van den Bosch lays out, this may be simple immunology to an immunologist, but they're not talking about it. The truth is if you understand what he is about to present right here, you will be smarter and have more understanding about the choices that should be made than Janet Woodcock or Rochelle Walensky or any of these people making decisions at the FDA and the CDC. For some reason, they do not understand this. And clearly, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the other leaders of the world, Boris Johnson, have no concept. So you're about ready to be smarter than everybody else making decisions in the world? Wrap your head around this, and you may have to rewind it a couple times in the future to really get it. I'll do my best to help you out with it. Take a look.
I'm showing two situations, two individuals, if you like, one who is vaccinated and the other is not vaccinated. And I'm trying to keep this very, very simple. And as we were saying, you always have a proportion of mutants. I call them here, for example, more infectious variants. And you have, let's say, and I'm simplifying, I know there is many variants, etc. So I only take one variant, and you have the bigger balls here, or so to say, the original strain. So let's say we have 100 viral particles, right? And the ratio is 80 wildfires, so the Wuhan strain, and 20 variants. So it is a ratio of 1 to 5, one variant and four Wuhan lineages, so 1 in 5 for the variant. So what happens when this inoculum will be put on a vaccinated person versus a non-vaccinated? Well, the vaccinated of course, if he's vaccinated, will have antibodies against the spike protein. And therefore, there will be a selection of this different viruses, because when, and I'm representing this by a small hole, only in fact the smaller balls, these are the variants, will pass through that hole. So that means there is a resistance. The resistance is the smaller hole. If that resistance exists, well, there is only those viruses that can overcome this resistance by passing through this small hole that will be selected. So we can, for example, from the 100 particles, we can through this selection reduce them, let's say, to 10. So we have a reduction of 10 times. So now exactly the same situation with an unvaccinated person. And so let's assume we have the same level of reduction. From the 100 particles, we are going to go down to 10 particles. What is the difference? Well, the difference is now that the innate antibodies, they are not selective. They do not discriminate against more infectious particles or original particles. They are non-selective. So they reduce the viral load, but they do it in the same way for the more infectious variants as for the original strains. So that means that I'm going to have the same ratio, 1:4, that I had at the beginning, one variant for 4 original particles. So the 10 that I have here, well, there are 2 variants and 8 wild-type viruses.
All right. Now, hopefully you understood that, but basically what he's saying, they're both getting hit with the same viral load. If you imagine the world, we have the majority, especially let's look at last year. We had the Alpha strain, which is what the vaccine was made for, the Wuhan strain, as he describes it. That was the majority. That is a lighter, milder virus. His concern from the beginning has been, we're going to select the more deadly strains. We're going to select the more infectious strains. And he said right at the beginning of this video, what he was really upset about was, he says, we keep getting fact-checked, and people say that we're creating mutants, or that we're making mutations or mutants. He says, we're not. We're selecting the mutants that already exist. As he points out, we have variants all over right now, but there's just a tiny amount of them. They're not winning the battle in nature. They're losing to the more dominant strain, which was Alpha. Now it's Delta. Delta, much more infectious. What he's concerned about is a much more infectious and much more deadly variant that's out there. They're already out there, but they're in the minority. The problem is the vaccinated are going to select and create more and more of that minority and make it grow to become the majority, and then that can wipe out our species, okay? So let me make this perfectly clear. This is an unvaccinated person. This is a vaccinated person. Now, I ran out of blue, but just go ahead and assume the green are the same as the blue. All right, we got blue and red, green and red, same thing. All right, the majority, you know, what he said is a 5-to-1 ratio. So you have a little bit of the deadly, let's say the deadly virus, and much more of the non-deadly virus. Well, they're both getting hit with that same amount, right? Same thing over here. They both got hit the same way. Majority of the less effective and a little bit minority of the more infection and perhaps deadly strain. But what happens is this vaccinated person only fights this, only fights what the vaccine told them to fight, so he doesn't. Now, when you're fighting it, remember you're fighting it, you're going through that period where you're trying to develop immunity. Well, you're reducing it down, but you're still shedding it about 10% is what he's saying. So you're shedding about 10% of the viral load that's inside of you. Only the vaccinated is not shedding any of the more mild variant or the more mild original strain. They're not shedding this because this is the only thing that their body killed. That vaccine taught them to kill the spike protein. So when they're shedding the 10%, all 10% is the more deadly strain. Whereas the unvaccinated isn't selective, doesn't care whether it's the deadly, the more deadly or the less deadly. And it also knows that it came in at a 5-to-1 ratio. So in that same ratio, it's gonna drop down to 10%, 5-to-1, meaning if you went with 100 particles, you're left with, you know, 8 particles of the more mild, more friendly strain and 2 particles of the deadly strain that you are, you know, basically shedding. So this is what makes the unvaccinated person a filter that is filtering it down and making sure that the deadly strain remains a minority, does not become the majority like this one. Now imagine if we have a world where more and more of these people are standing around us. then we have a problem. Then we're outnumbered. And now, slowly but surely, this is what happens to the world. Do we have a map? Do we get that graph? There we go. There's the deadly strain as it spreads because of the vaccination. No blue in there. Eventually, the blue is wiped out, and the vaccinated only then end up spreading the red, the deadly version, until we can't stop it. This is the concern that Geert Vandenbosch is pointing out.
Yeah.
And so that's how that works. Now, Dr. Robert Malone takes this one step further. That's about shedding and spreading, who's shedding and spreading more. But he talks about something that we talked about before, and I think it's really important to understand this. We're talking about original antigenic sin. Here's Dr. Robert Malone.
I think that we're going to probably see with these higher viral loads more immune complex disease. Two other things that Geert kind of almost touched on, but not quite. We have this issue of original antigenic sin, and he speaks about the pre-existing antibodies, but what we have with vaccine that is no longer virus strain matched very well is that we're generating memory populations that are going to be reactive to developing antibodies in particular against epitopes on a strain that is going to no longer really be circulating so much anymore. And what happens then is when you encounter a new strain, you're predisposed to generating antibodies that are mismatched. So that's the short version of original antigenic sin.
Okay, original antigenic sin is something we've talked about. It's a weird term, but you can make it make sense. The problem is you create an error that repeats itself, just like a sin, something you can't overcome that you're going to pay the penance for the rest of your life. That's what happens with vaccination. This body will never see anything except that blue virus. It believes this is always the enemy, and it's always looking for this. It's only looking for this. And so, therefore, every time anything else comes along, any other color, it still ends up sticking to it. So if it gets hit with red, if it gets hit with a bunch of red, it gets all infected again because it can never see it. It can't see that variant. Meanwhile, this body, the natural immunity, after it got done shedding for a couple of days, totally cleared the virus, is now going to walk this planet, possibly the rest of their lives, fully immune, fully protected. So it doesn't matter what they get hit with, nothing sticks because this body can handle any variant that there is. This one, everything but blue sticks to it. Only the original virus is it protected against. Everything else hits it. So what happens? What happens if a truly deadly form of the virus comes? Let's just call this Darth Vader. Darth Vader comes along, the Darth Vader strain, and if you catch this sucker, this variant that's in the minority, you're gonna die. Well, what happens is it doesn't matter. It does not stick to this guy. It cannot. He is able to block himself from every variant because of that robust immunity he got naturally. But the original antigenic sin means this one will never recognize it. It doesn't matter how many times they get infected. He will always get infected over and over again. And if one of these comes along and he gets infected with that, we're only going to, in many ways, hope that this person dies before spreading this to us, before shedding it to us, because he's a carrier, and now, before he dies, he's going to carry this to everybody else. We need as many people as we can get, and we're going to get deeper into this with Geert Vandenbosch and Malone.
Ooh.
The more unvaccinated we get, the more we filter this virus out, the more we have strong, lifelong natural immunity that protects us. All right, let's move on to the next video.
Shit.
Take a look at this.
Within a year, I think we will be able to come back to normal life. I don't think that this means that variants will not be continue coming. And I don't think that this means that we should be able to live our lives without having immune, without having vaccinations, basically. Because the virus is spread all over the world, that we will continue seeing new variants that are coming out. And also we will have vaccines that they will last at least a year. And I think the most likely scenario is annual revaccination. But we don't know really. We need to wait and see the data.
So the CEO of Pfizer is explaining exactly what I just explained. This is you in the future if he gets his way. We will never clear this virus. We will never get rid of it. There will always be variants that keep sticking to us, and we'll keep making vaccines to try and stay ahead of that curve. Geir VandenBosch has said you'll never make enough vaccines. Eventually, nature's going to win. This is our problem. But hey, it works great if you're Pfizer CEO, right? He's basically saying, do you think you're going to get back to normal without a vaccine? No, those days will never happen. Just like they said at the WHO, we have made you dependent upon the vaccine. We've hurt your immune system so you can't block any variant. The only thing that can block a variant is the next drug or vaccine we try to give you. They have put you on a conveyor belt. They don't want any of the people like this that don't need Pfizer. This guy doesn't need Pfizer once he's caught the disease. All right, let's move on. So now, who's making these decisions? Are they smart people? Are they intelligent scientists? Do they know what they're doing? Geert VandenBosch gives us his perspective on that.
I think even the regulators, they are used to looking at vaccines that have been tested in clinical trials in a very well-defined environment, where you don't have what we see now during the pandemic. What we see is that you start vaccinating lots and lots of people, you start developing a kind of dynamic of population level immunity. And that dynamic, that changes, of course, the more you vaccinate people, that dynamic has repercussions on the evolutionary dynamics of the virus. And those influences and interactions are having an impact on the effectiveness of the vaccines, etc. And we see this thing evolving, right? This is something these guys, in fact, have no experience with. I think that is why they are completely puzzled. And I think there is a huge need for them to learn, really to learn. But it's very difficult if you are like a regulatory authority to say, well, guys, sorry, but we first have, you know, to dive in our books and in a number of publications and listen to a number of experts who can explain us those dynamics before we can reasonably, you know, make an assessment of a dossier. So, I mean, it's, and I think, you know, one of these regulators, I happen to know pretty well one of these regulators who left FDA. And I think this is kind of like, you know, this uncertainty and anxiousness of not knowing and not understanding what is going to happen. Because if you understand these things, we're all scientists, if you understand, you can act in good faith and you know these are the risks and these are the advantages or disadvantages. But if the beast is unknown and you do something at such a large scale, an authorization at a large scale, and you go into children, something we rarely do right away with vaccines, right? Then it becomes really something that is looks very, very scary to people. And I think personally, we're going to see other folks leaving, right? That's and what
I mean, he's talking obviously about the two FDA scientists top of their game that walked away based on this booster discussion. But I think he's giving us an insight beyond just the fact that they're sort of being bullied by Biden. I think what he's saying is probably true. These people don't know what I know. They don't study all the pressures that happen in a natural evolution of a virus and a vaccine in real-world scenarios. They're all used to a vaccine that went through controlled trials where they've studied the data over many years, had a placebo group, and they can understand what they're looking at. They know how people react, and they sort of make their policies based on that. They've never done this. They don't know what they've just done. And now, and I've said this, he's almost mirroring what I said over the last couple of weeks. I think it's starting to dawn on Rochelle Walensky, oh my God, I'm gonna be the face of the person that might have marched 160 million people to their death. This vaccine is backfiring. People are getting more and more sick. The highest rates of infection are amongst the vaccinated in Israel. The highest rates of hospitalization and death in Israel are the vaccinated. Something is going wrong. Can you imagine if you're one of the FDA regulators and you're realizing, oh my God, the decisions I made, something's going wrong. It looks like people are gonna start dying. And now I'm starting to hear and remember someone talking about ADE and issues like that. What if that really happens? I'm going to quit before my face is in the middle of this thing. That may be happening. And think about what he said. They need to learn. They don't understand what I know. They're not inviting me, but they need to say to themselves, I got to open up my textbooks. I think what's even harder about that than opening up their textbooks again and trying to learn what Geert Van den Bosch knows is they may actually have to admit, oh my God, we made a mistake, and tell the world, sorry, whoops. Sorry, we put our names on it. We were at ACIP. We were at FDA. We made these decisions. We went along with it, WHO. We went along with Biden. And as it turns out, we made a colossal error. That is what he's describing as the culture. And it is really scary how untalented these people are, how little they know, and the fact that they're not inviting Geert Van den Bosch into the room. They're just going to push ahead and keep putting Pfizer, the guy that's going to make billions of dollars. I mean, a company's going to make tens of billions of dollars. The news is we're going to listen to him, but not to Geert Van den Bosch, the only man who truly understands the science in a real-world scenario. All right, well, now Dr. Malone weighs in. Now, remember, Dr. Malone has worked inside of the FDA, does work with the NIH. He does know these people. So what he tries to explain is the culture of how these decisions are being made, even when we do have smart scientists like at ACIP or at Burbank that express concerns. What happens if the policies or who's writing the policies that might override this? Listen to this.
It's the White House that's setting the policy, which is to say, because Tony Fauci is appointed basically the czar of this disease, it's mostly comes down to Dr. Fauci's personal perspective. And then you flow, and we just saw a great example of this kind of process flow with this decision about the third jab, the booster experience in the United States. We had the independent academic reviewers looking at the data on behalf of the FDA. This is the Virbac panel. And they made a clear, unambiguous decision that despite the lack of sufficient data to make a go decision in terms of safety and efficacy in the elderly and high-risk populations, they were going to go ahead and authorize that because the risk to those populations was already sufficiently well documented because of the Israeli data showing and some American data showing that the vaccine durability was so poor. So these people are now at higher risk, and they were already at higher risk, and now their vaccine protection is dropping. And so they said, okay, in the balance, we should go ahead with that. But then you had the director of the CDC, the FDA, Janet Woodcock, step in and say, well, that's all fine and dandy, but I'm going to add another group, which is basically, we think that anybody that has contact with the public, so this is nurses, healthcare personnel, all the way down to grocery clerks, are at significantly enhanced risk of severe disease and death. There's actually no data supporting that. So they made that political decision because they want to impose universal mandates. So then it gets tossed over to let's understand how the US works. Then it gets tossed to the CDC. And the CDC independent panel called the ACIP evaluate the same data, and they say, no, we reject this added third group that the director of the FDA has added in. That's all those with public contact. We reject that logic. There's no data to support that assertion. And we just think you should go ahead with the same recommendation the Virbac gave. And then we had, within 2 days, the director of the CDC overruled that and went back to the same policy that Janet Woodcock, the director of the FDA, had rolled out, which is basically coming from Tony Fauci, as I explained. So that's how things are working here.
I think that's just amazing, incredibly revealing. And if you're questioning whether or not Dr. Robert Malone understands what he's talking about, I want to just very quickly, when I was having the interview I had with him just a couple of months ago, it was clear he was talking about FDA and NIH and like the vaccine the vaccine program, VAERS, and all of that in ways that I haven't heard anyone else understand that's on the pro-vaccine side. As I said, he has contracts with the Department of Defense. He works very closely with the FDA. He made it clear he had an inside scoop, and when we were watching this clip, I thought, let's replay that. Look at what he predicts about Janet Woodcock and tell me he doesn't know what's happening on the inside. Listen to this.
They had the legislative latitude to do so, and they elected to do nothing. Okay, so you're dead on. If we're going to point a finger at somebody, and we'll see how long Janet stays. I think it might not be too long.
There it is. We'll see how long Janet Woodcock stays. I think it might not be too long. He alluded to the fact that her days were numbered. No one had heard that. None of us knew that. But look at the headline that came out just this last week. Acting FDA Chief Janet Woodcock ruled out as Biden nominee. So this is a man that's on the inside. He's telling you how this works. He has insights when he's talking about that override. We actually have, I mean, Burback may not be perfect, and ACIP I make fun of all the time, but it at least is a body of people that are weighing in. And if they vote against something, they really deliberated on it, and they usually say yes. So when they say no, you would think it'd be taken seriously. Janet Woodcock overrides that. Then it goes over to the CDC. So the FDA approves it. FDA says, oh, we're going boosters. And Janet Woodcock says, like, for everybody, not just like the high-risk group. So it goes over to the ACIP. They look back. They say, well, we get what Janet Woodcock said, but we're also looking at all of our fellow scientists that are over at Burback, and we're saying, no, we like what they said. We have the same complaints. We don't see enough science showing that, number one, that the booster will work long enough to make a difference, and number two, what will be the side effects of the booster? We have a lot of serious side effects that happen after the second shot. What happens at the third shot? We need to see that. So they said, no, we're going to go with the original recommendations of the ACIP, not Woodcock, and then here comes Rochelle Walensky, and this is what she says.
As CDC director, it's my job to recognize where our actions can have the greatest impact. Had I been in the room and on the committee, I would have voted yes. And that is reflected in my resulting decision to allow the use of Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 booster dose for those 18 and older at high risk of COVID-19 exposure and transmission because of occupational and institutional exposure.
There you have it. I know that we have a democratic process, but we don't care about the democracy. I'm reporting to the vaccine czar, Tony Fauci, and he says this is the way it's going to go. And there is the man probably behind making all these decisions. So that's how the decisions are being made. This genius, that man right there, is making all the decisions, which is why I think we'll all get a little piece of relief and maybe a little bit of joy when he is finally carted off to prison for crimes against humanity. No one deserves that more than Dr. Anthony Fauci. Okay, moving on. So now we're going to revisit, in many ways, Geert Vandenbosch wants to make clear that we understand this infectious pressure issue that he's talking about. I already showed you, we showed you his graphs, I showed you with Barbie dolls, hopefully you're getting it, but he's emphatic, so let's listen to him.
I think that the most important thing to do, if there is one thing that I really need to point out, is to reduce his infectious pressure. And that is, for me, something nobody has any kind of idea how we are going to get rid of this highly infectious variants. And they are not going to calm down spontaneously. I mean, it's not like this virus is going to say all of a sudden, well, enough is enough. I'm going to insert a number of mutations that are going to diminish my infectiousness. Well, first of all, again, we have to stop this mass vaccination. The worst thing ever that we do is to vaccinate younger age groups. As I try to explain, this is the buffer. The younger age groups, you bring them in, for example, non-vaccinated, you're going to see a diminishment in the infectious pressure. They are the vacuum cleaners. If we start vaccinating these people, they lose this potential. I showed you, when people get vaccinated, they are going to breed, in fact, those infectious, more infectious strains, and through immune selection pressure, there is no longer this elimination. We lose completely this buffer. When people get a disease, they build long-lived immunity. So this is really our hope for herd immunity. I mean, nobody talks anymore about herd immunity. What is the objective still of the mass vaccination campaign? Can anybody tell me what the objective? I mean, if there is no objective, well, then there is also no strategy, of course. And there is no strategy. There's only tactics, right? I mean, there is like, everybody's doing something, but there is no common objective. And every country is doing their own thing. So this is really a disaster, because the only way to solve this still, I mean, we don't change virology, we don't change immunology, it's still the interplay between the virus and the immune system, it's still herd immunity. So how where are we going to get herd immunity from? Certainly not from the vaccination, and even less when we do mass vaccination.
Amazing, right? I mean, look what he just said. What happened to herd immunity? I mean, what happened to herd immunity? The entire purpose of every vaccine I have ever made in my life, every vaccine that Dr. Robert Malone has ever made in his life, the entire purpose was to reach herd immunity, and we're not hearing that talked about because there's no way. Let's be perfectly clear. There is no way this vaccine can get us to herd immunity. Do you hear that? So it doesn't matter that Joe Biden thinks it, doddering up there in his fake, you know, vaccine moment inside the fake White House, telling us 97 to 98% of vaccinated will get us there. It's not going to get us there. Geert Vandenbosch clearly knows more than Joe Biden. He's telling you this vaccine cannot do it. He says the worst thing ever will be to vaccinate our younger people. As you know, we've pointed out, that have zero risk of any issues with this virus. We vaccinate them, and as I showed you, they're the ones, they're those filters, they're the ones filtering out the deadly virus and making sure that we're only fighting the less resistant virus and the less deadly virus. They can get us back to that place, but if we vaccinate them, those are our vacuum cleaners. We're done. Now we don't have anything in the world. There's no filter. There's no one breathing in and breathing out, you know, more and more protection, more and, you know, less and less of the deadly the viruses that are coming. The vaccinated are putting us at risk, and they're destroying any chance we have at herd immunity. It could not be said clearer. And when it comes to the failings of this vaccine, and we wonder, are we seeing higher death rates? So many nations are talking about right now that we have higher excess mortality now than this exact same time last year when we had no vaccine. Now, we can't look at, you know, whether it's COVID or not. In the end, because our data really sucks so bad, we're gonna be stuck with overall, right? Excess data, excess deaths. Dr. Robert Malone touches on that for a moment.
Actually, Geert, I think I call this the ghost in the data. In the UK databases and Scottish databases, there is this persistent odd signal in the vaccine recipients of lower incidence, relatively speaking, after you adjust for the, you know, you got to adjust for the confounders of the percent vaccinated versus the percent unvaccinated, et cetera. But there's this persistent signal in the UK data that there seems to be an excess in deaths in the vaccinated, and yet a relative deficit in severe disease in the vaccinated. So it's as if it's somehow protecting from severe disease, but there is some increased incidence in mortality compared to the unvaccinated after you did corrections, and it's paradoxical. So that may be the sign that you're looking for.
I mean, very strange. What he's saying is he believes he does see a reduction in symptoms. You know, there's more symptoms, it appears, in the unvaccinated, but the deaths are much higher in the vaccinated, which is really weird. So I guess, what, you give up symptoms and you just die? So you're either going to be fine or you die. I mean, that's your choice. Whereas the unvaccinated, you know, we may get sick, but we will get through it. It's going to be okay. Weird choices, incredible choices. Let's get down to it. Coming into the end here now, well, who wins? Right? Who wins this battle? If we continue in this direction, if we continue to not listen to Geert Vandenbosch and the known immunology and science of pressuring a virus, who ends up winning? Do we win? This is what Geert Vandenbosch has to say.
You see, in all the countries where we have this high vaccination rates, that is where we have the high infection rates, right? I mean, what else? This is a complete no-brainer, right? I mean, this is just simply common sense, and it could be done. That is my frustration, of course. It could be done, but if we continue with the mass vaccination, I mean, nature will win.
Nature will win. There you have it. Saying we could, if we just stop vaccinating right now. And let me be clear. Dr. Robert Malone believes let's keep vaccinating the very high-risk group, those that are over the age, I think, of 65, 70 with other comorbidities. He believes go ahead and vaccinate them. They're already at hanging in the balance anyway. Maybe the risk of the vaccine is okay. I'm not sure how he, you know, justifies that in himself, but that is what he's stating. With the rest of them, everybody else that is not at risk, we need as many unvaccinated people on this planet is what Geert is saying if we have any chance of surviving, if we have any chance of making sure that the CEO of Pfizer does not take this virus and make it so deadly that even he can't stop it and we're all screwed, then we need to stop vaccinating. And those of you that are unvaccinated, stand strong. You must stand strong, not just because of your job, not just because of, you know, the freedom issue or the liberty issue. Literally, our species may depend on how many of us remain capable of fighting, neutralizing this virus, and developing the long-lived immunity that can eradicate this virus before it is made to be too deadly to handle. So closing out, this is what these guys had to say.
Whether you're vaccinated or you're not vaccinated, what you need to care about is your susceptibility. What can I do to protect myself better? We know that somebody who is young, who is in good health, has a very good innate immunity, etc., is better protected as a non-vaccinated, these type of things. So that is what we should care about, and we should really please get rid of this unjustifiable discrimination between vaccinees and non-vaccinated, non-vaccinated discriminate vaccinees and vice versa. There is a lot of discrimination going on that is even fostered by all these policies around vaccination mandates and all this ridiculous stuff which has no scientific basis whatsoever. I think and hope Robert will to some extent agree with me.
I strongly agree that the policies are irrational, and I think they reflect a certain amount of frantic activity on the part of the public policymakers. I think they're at a loss of what to do, and that's, you know, I get back to the give the three-year-old a hammer and everything's a nail. They think that by doing this, they're showing that they're doing something. But it's incredibly divisive, and I'm really grateful to hear you make this point, Kurt. Mm.
This was an interview that went on for an hour and a half. We just cut out some excerpts. As always, everything that was that we showed you here and the entire thing will be in your hands. You can go there if you want to watch it yourself. Also, if you're just on our newsletter, you will receive it this Monday. I really want to stress that you should all sit down, take the time, and really go through it. Really embrace what these two really, truly brilliant scientists and medical professionals are saying. They are not alone. They just happen to be the ones bold enough to say it. Meanwhile, we have three-year-olds with hammers smashing the world as we know it inside of the CDC, the FDA, the WHO. As Dr. Malone and Geert Vandenbosch made it clear there, these are irrational policies. They make absolutely no sense. They are not backed in any type of science that is plausible or credible. This must be stopped. Folks, you know, I say it over and over again. You got to stand up for what you believe in now. You have to stand up even for things you don't understand, like science. We are presenting the science. We've got to save science. This science is going to is affecting our religions. It's affecting our lives. It's going to affect our ability to work, our ability to eat. This is getting serious. If you like that clip, then be sure to check out our live broadcast of The High Wire every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Pacific time. You can watch it on iTunes and Twitter. We'll see you there.